All right, Tavosai, good morning. Let's begin. New Perek. Today's daf is Kuf Lamed Hey. We are beginning the 11th Perek of Maseches Chulin, although we have a little bit of catch-up to do on Kuf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. So we'll say we're starting from 134b, the Mishnah. So remember, again, our shiurim this month are dedicated by Paul and Kathy Pollack, in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Paul's parents, Shmuel ben Zechariah and Sarah Bas Avram. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamas will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. And I will say with that, let's begin. So we are picking up Kof Lamed Dalet Amud Beis 134b at the Mishnah. So I'm not even going to say how many lines up because it's too many to count. Let's take a look at the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows. Ezu Zroa. Well, so remember again, this is actually interesting. We're now at the end of the Perek of Zroa Nechayayim. So now the Mishnah says, by the way, what is the Zroa? Right? What is the definition of the Zroa? So min ha-perek shel arkuva ad kaf shel yad. So we'll say, so literally again, it's from essentially the area of the knee up until the shoulder. Vahu shel nazir. This is the same thing as a zroa for the carbon of the nazir. Ukenegdo, and I will say opposite that. Ukenegdo beregel shok, and I will say the same corresponding area between the knee up to the top of the leg area is in the hind leg is considered to be the shok. Rabbi Hudomer shok min haperek shel arkuva ad sovach shel regel. So ultimately, again, so Rabbi Huda says that the shok is from the Perek Shel Arkuva, which essentially is the knee, up until the knee joint. So the Gemara says, Ezehu Lechi, what's the Lechi? Remember again, the Lechi is the jaw. Min HaPerek Shel Lechi at Pika Shel Gargeres. It is from the joint of, the jaw joint, up until the opening of the trachea. Tana Rabbanan, so the Gemara says, Vayter. Hazroa Ze Zroa Yom. So also when we say Zroa, Zroa refers ultimately again to the right foreleg. Ata Omer Zezra Yamin, O Eno Ela Zra Small. How do you know that it refers to the right foreleg? Maybe it's the left foreleg. Talmud Lomar Hazra. Therefore, the pasuk says, Hadheayidia, the Zra, we understand, refers to what? The right foreleg. So, my Talmud, so we'll say, what exactly is, well, how do you know that Jerusha? Kidamarava, Hayerech, Hamiyumenesh Shabir. So, also remember again, we had this by Gid Hanasha, that according to the opinion which holds, that Gid Hanasha only applies to the right leg. How do you know it applies to the right leg and not to the left? Because the pasuk says, Hayerech. Hayerech, the Gemara understands me to be the Chashuv Yerech, which refers ultimately to what? To the right leg. Hachanami Hazroa, Hamiyumen Shabizroa. Therefore, again, Hazra teaches me that Halacha Lamaisra refers to the right foreleg. Says the Gemara, V'halechayayim L'may Asa. So what do I learn ultimately again from the phrase V'halechayayim? So the Havit Semer Sheberosh Kvasim, it comes to include the wool that is on the head of sheep. U'sa'ar Shebezakan Tayashim. And ultimately, again, it refers to the beard of a goat. So we'll say that those are also included in the Matana of the Lechayayim. Va'keva L'may Asa. So what do I learn from the word keva? So the Gemara says, L'havi Chelev Shagabi Akeva. It comes to include when the kohen gets the stomach. He also gets the chelev, the fat that is on top of the stomach. V'chalav Shebesoch Akeva. And the milk which is inside of the stomach. Remember again, that milk which is inside of the stomach was one form of rennet, right, for cheese making. So obviously, again, that has a value to it as well. Then Rabbi Shua says, Kohanim Nagu Bo Ayin Yafe. The Kohanim were very generous, and the Kohanim often would allow the owners to keep the chalev on top of the stomach and the chalav inside of the stomach. So the Gemara says, Taima Dinagu. So the reason, again, that is the reason that the owners were able to keep the chalev on top of the stomach and the chalav inside of the stomach was because the Kohanim were nohig to allow them to keep it. Halo Nagu. If the Kohanim would not be nohig like this, then what? Didehu, ultimately, again, it would be the property of the Kohen. So Darshe Chamuros Hayom. So this is actually very interesting. So in addition to the actual keva itself, the halacha was the Kohen technically was entitled to the fat on top of the stomach and to the milk inside. To the fat on top of the stomach, the milk inside of the stomach. But if the Kohanim were no egg, ultimately to gift that back to the owners. Darshe Chamuros Hayom. We'll say a beautiful drash over here. Those who dash in psukim used to say as well as chamuros, Rashi brings down, means mikraos hastumim. Psukim that were a bit sasun, psukim themselves which were a bit cryptic. So how do they darshan? So hazroa keneged hayad. So we'll say ultimately, interestingly enough, so why do the Kohanim get the zroa? Why do they get the foreleg for the matnos kuna? That corresponds to the hand. Whose hand? Bechinu omer vayikach romach biado. We'll say Pinchas took the spear in his hand when he performed ultimately again this act of kanos. So therefore, since Pinchas went ahead and took the spear in his hand, therefore the Kohanim get the foreleg. Next, Ulechayayim. Why did they get the jaw? Kineget tefila. This corresponds ultimately again to prayer. V'chinu Omer vayamul Pinchas vayipalo. Pinchas stood and he davened. He davened ultimately before he killed Zimri and Cosby. So therefore, again, corresponding to Pinchas' davening, we get the jaw. Or excuse me, the Kohanim get the jaw. Keva, kimashma. Why do they get the stomach? So I'll say that's the most obvious part of the story. Bechinu Umer, ve'esha'isha kubasa. Because when Pinchas ultimately kills Zimri and Cosby, he stabs them both through the stomach. As a result, they are given a matnos kuhuna, ultimately, again, of the keva. So the Tana brings it from here. Shok hayomin, ainli ela shok hayomin. So we'll say, I only know that it applies ultimately again to the right. Shok, so zroa mukdashin minai. And we'll say, how do I know that when it comes to the zroa of the nazir, that is also the right leg? Talmud lomar, truma. Talmud lomar, so the pasuk actually says, here quoting from the pasuk, quoting from the pasuk face, shok hayavim titnu truma lakoin mizifkai shalmeichem. So the Gemara says, zroachulin minayin. So I learn it out again from that lashon of truma. Zroachulin minayin. How do I know that I will say when giving the matana to the kohen, it also applies to the right foreleg? Tamud lomar titnu. Good. Ezehu lechi. So we'll remember again, the Mishnah said, what is the lechi that you give to the kohen? Mina perek shalechi, from the joint, from the jaw, from, I guess, what's called the jawbone joint. The jaw joint, right? Ad pika shel gageris, until the opening of the trachea. Says in Rabbi Tanya, not la beis hashchitim. But I will say, we learned that when the kohen takes the jawbone, he takes the beis hashchita, the area of the shchita as well. So I will say, the problem with that is, if you look at Rashi, beis hashchita ima, haynu tofes ba'omek tzavra ba'alach son yosem in apika. And I will say, if the kohen gets the area of the shchita, what we call the area on the neck of the beis hashchita, if that comes with the jawbone, the problem with that, I will say, is that's much deeper in the animal than the opening of the trachea, and that essentially would mean that halacha l'maisa, you're cutting the shchita at an angle. So it says the Gemara, Lo kash, yaharabon on Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus. The sanya, because we're going to write, so, psula, hey, id Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, al murgemes shik shera. So, we'll listen to this. So, we're going to write some mugremes. So, we'll say mugremes means when you shecht ba'alachson, right? When you shecht at an angle. Normally, we try to keep shechita straight. What happens if you shecht at an angle? So, ultimately, again, it's a machlokus, whether or not such a shechita is permitted. The Rabbanan say it's possible. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus said that it's mutter. So, it must be that the brisa, which says that when the kohen takes the jawbone, he doesn't just get the jaw, but he also gets what? The base hashechita, is in accordance with the opinion who holds that mugremes, shechting at an angle, is permitted. That's how the kohen gets the base hashechita as well. Ibai seen the other possibility is habahab rabbanon. No, they both reflect the view of the rabbanon. Umay ima. What does it mean when we say that the base hashechita stays ima with it? Ima de behema. So you both say we thought that ima meant that when the kohen takes the lechayayim, he gets the base hashechita, the area of the neck as well. It could actually mean ima means what? That halacha lemaisa, the beis hashchita ultimately remains with the animal. In other words, namely, the kohen just takes the lechayayim, not the beis hashchita, and the beis hashchita remains ultimately with the animal. Hadron Allah hazra ba'alachayayim. We'll say mazel tov. Vayter, kuf lamed hey. Reishis hageis. So we'll say, here we go. So now we're going to talk about going on in the list of matnos kuhuna. Now we're going to focus on the first of the shearings. Right, the Reishis hageis, the first of the shearings, Noig ba'aretz u'b'chutz la'aretz. It applies in Eretz Yisrael, outside of Eretz Yisrael, b'fnei abayis, shalom b'fnei abayis, with the Beis HaMikdash, without the Beis HaMikdash, b'chulin, only with unconsecrated animals, avalo b'mukdashin. But I will say, it does not go ahead and apply to consecrated animals. If you look at Rashi, Reishis HaGeis, kol ha'gazus sono b'in t'lo'im b'in z'kein li'va'afilu gavzan me'apamim, No sing mimena matana lekohen. Shabbos says that's very interesting. Every single time you shear your sheep, ultimately, again, you have to give a portion to the kohen from the first of the shearings. So the Gemara says as follows. So the Mishnah says as follows. Avalom mukdashim, but ultimately only applies to chulin animals. Does not apply to hekdish animals. Chomer bizra v'lechayayim ubekev mereishes hayei. So Rabbi said there is a chumrah that the. Now remember again, these are all under the umbrella of matnos kuhuna, but there is a chumrah that zra v'lechayayim and keva have over first shearings. How so? Shazra v'lechayayim v'akeva nagin bebakar ubitzon. So we'll say Zrel Chayayim and Keva apply to all types of livestock. They apply to bakar, cattle. They apply to tzon, sheep. Bimeruba ubemuat. And we'll say they also apply no matter how many animals you're shechting. Whether you're shechting one or you're shechting 100, the halacha of Zrel Chayayim and Keva says from whatever animal you're shechting, you have to give the kohen the jaw, the foreleg, and the stomach. However, again, Voracious Hagez, so first of all, only applies to sheep. That's number one. And it only applies if you're shearing a lot of sheep. So of course, the next logical question is, so what's a lot? This is actually very interesting. Beishamai says, two sheep. That's a lot. The Bible says, this is actually amazing. Where do you get this from? This is actually so beautiful. Because the Pasuk in Yeshaya says, Vahaya bayomahu, it will be on that day, Yechaya ish eglas bakar u'shteitzon. So we'll say, Bayamahu refers to when? The Messianic era. Life is going to be perfect. And what's a picture of perfection? One cow and two sheep. We'll say, halavai, we should be so low maintenance, right? One cow and two sheep. You've got your dairy products covered, right? You go ahead and you've got your clothing covered because you have wool, right? One cow and two sheep. Incredible. That's Mashiach. I don't know if this makes you want to daven for Mashiach more or less. Right? This is it's a different discussion. I will say, but really, what it paints a picture of is something so beautiful, which is a simple life, right? This is also ish tachas gafno tein, right? Every person under his vine, under his fig tree. Something quite beautiful about this. Yeah, okay. So therefore, again, Beis Shammai says, a lot means two. A lot means two. So what happens? Beis Hillel omrim chamesh. Beis Hillel says five. Shene'emar. Quotes over here, the pasuk from Shmuel Aleph. This is by Abigail, when David is about to go ahead and kill Naval, because he got upset. Naval wouldn't help him. Abigail sends him a gift. So how much did she send him? Chamesh son asuyos. Literally, again, five laden sheep. Five laden sheep. Laden means that they have a lot of wool. So therefore, again, Beis Hillel understands from here that five is a significant unit. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus Omer, Chamesh Rechelos Gozizos, Mone Upras Chayavis Bereishis Hagaz. See, he says, Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus Rabosai further defines this. He says it's five sheep, but five sheep that could go ahead and essentially produce 1.5 mone of wool. That's so Rabbi Chanina Mendoza adds in, it's not just a numerical issue, it's also a wool output issue. How much can they actually go ahead and produce? Again, we're going to define all of this in the Gemara. Look at Rashi. Mana upras, kolachas, mana v'chatz, yubatsi mirachi lo chashev gaz. So it has to produce at least 1.5 mana, ultimately, of shearings in order to go ahead and be considered significant. Good, God, Viter. So the Gemara says, v'cham l'cham say chamish rechelos, goes as those Koshit. Now, Chachamim go back, and they seemingly agree with Beis Hillel, and they say it's five rechelos, five sheep, and whatever output of wool. The output of wool doesn't matter. What really matters is the number of sheep. Okay, so obviously the Gemara will distinguish between all of these opinions. The Kamen Ostenlo, so we'll say, interestingly enough, how much wool do you have to give the kohen? So now we've discussed how many animals do you have to have in order to trigger the obligation. How much wool do you actually have to give the kohen? Mishkal chamish slaim b'Yehuda. So we'll say you have to give the weight of five slaim. Five slaim is the measurement they use in Yehuda. Shehein eser slaim begalil, which is the equivalent of 10 slaim in the north. So mulubad. We'll say we're on kuf lamet hamad aleph 135a in the Mishnah. Last short line on top. Miluban velotzoi. Ultimately, again, it has to be white wool and not dirty wool. What's interesting about this is as follows. After we just gave the shear, voracious hagaz, right? We just gave the shear. So then what? So then what? The shayla is that's a weight shear. So we'll say, so what's interesting is as follows. When that wool is dirty, what happens? There's schmutz in there, that's the technical term, right? There's schmutz in there that contributes towards the weight, which means the kohen is not going to get 5 slum of wool, he's going to get whatever it is, 4 slum of wool and 1 sela weight of schmutz. Therefore, it has to be clean wool. So the Gemara says, v'lo tzoi, k'dei lasos mimeno beged katan. Furthermore, there has to be enough wool that a person will be able to fashion from it a small beged, a small garment. Shene emar, titein lo. We'll say the pasuk says you have to give to the kohen, sheyehebo k'dei matano. That ultimately, again, there should be enough. In other words, we'll say that the giving has to be significant, that the kohen receives something from the Yisrael. Lo hispek litna lo achet. So this is very interesting. What happens if you did not go ahead and... So we'll say, just so you understand what we have so far. So far we have number of animals, according to some weight of the wool which the animals produce. Halacha lamaisa, how much you have to give to the kohen, 5 slaim, further defined by, which means enough wool to be able to make from it a small garment, white, clean wool, not soiled wool. Now we go on. Lo hispek litna lo achet zavo pater. We'll say, what happens if you went ahead and you dyed the wool first? Right, so what's the halacha? Potter. Ultimately, again, under those circumstances, you are potter from Rishis Agaz. Apparently, once you alter the wool, Rashi points out, the kanye b'shinui, the habile kemazik matnos kunosh sha'achon. We'll say, once you alter it, once you're mishana, that's kilu like you've stolen it. In other words, you've made a shinui. Once you make a shinui, you acquire it. Once you acquire it, it's yours. Now, we already learned that although we don't encourage you to take or to destroy matnos kuhuna, but once you did, it's yours. The same way that if you ate the zirah, the lechayim, and the keva, if you ate it, you ate it, right? You're not on the hook for anything else. So once you changed the wool, you dyed it, then halacha lamaisa, you've acquired it, and you're parted from giving it to the kohen. Love no, velot savo. We'll say, what happens if you whitened it, right? You whitened it, but you didn't dye it. Chayiv. So we'll say, even though apparently the whitening process is also some type of change, that's not enough of a shinui that you should now be the owner of that wool and part it from giving it to the kohen. Second wide line. So the Gemara says, if you purchase the wool of an akum. Now this is actually an interesting case. What's happening over here is my akum neighbor has sheep. And what happens? I purchase the wool. The wool is still attached to the sheep. Rashi points out it's b'mechubber, right? So I'm purchasing the wool while it's attached to the sheep from my akum neighbor. So what's the halacha? Patur mireishis agaz. Such a situation, ultimately, the halacha is that I am patur. I'm patur. Now we'll discuss why that is. The truth is, it's a simple pasuk that says, geiz tzoncha. Ultimately, again, I'm only chayef for the shearing of my sheep. Meaning it's not a din in just having wool, it's a din in owning sheep. So therefore, again, if the sheep, it belongs to a Gentile, then halacha lemais, even if I purchase the wool while it's still attached, I'm not chayav in reishis hagez. So the Gemara goes weiter. So halokeach geiz tzono shel chavero. Listen to this. But let's say I buy wool from my Jewish friend. Right? Same case. I'm purchasing the wool while it's still attached, ultimately, again, to the sheep of my Jewish friend. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Who's chayav? So listen to this. Im shir hamocher chayav. So we'll say, ultimately, again, let's say Reuven sells me sheep. So if he still owns more sheep and he's still doing more shearings, then ultimately what? The mocher, the seller, will be chayiv in reishis hagez. And apparently, again, I will not be. Lo shear, liu shear, but if I bought all of Reuven's sheep, then what? Halokeach chayiv. Then ultimately, the purchaser will be chayiv in reishis hagez. We're going to define all this in the Gemara, obviously. Hayu lo shnei minim, shchufo sulavan. So we'll say, let's say again, Reuven has two different types of sheep. He has dark sheep and white sheep. So what's the halacha? Machar lo shechufos, aval lo levanos. Zichar aval lo nekeva. Similarly, again, let's say Reuven has male sheep, female sheep. And let's say he sells me one complete type. So I purchase from all of his white sheep. Right? He still retains the dark sheep. I purchase from all the white sheep. I purchase from him all of the male sheep. He retains the females. What's the halacha? So we'll say in that case, we essentially, the halacha views it as two sheep cohorts, right? When you have two sheep cohorts, therefore what? Zet no sin liatzmo, v'zet no sin liatzmo. Ultimately, again, I'll have to give reishis hageiz from my group, Reuven will give reishis hageiz from his group, and shalom aleichem. So suppose you hear the distinction in those two cases. Case number one is Reuven has one general flock. If I just buy a sheep, one sheep, right, and leave the rest with Reuven, Reuven's chayv and reishis hageiz, but I am not. If I buy all of Reuven's sheep from him, then I am chayiv, Reuven is not. If Reuven has different sheep cohorts, and I buy one of those cohorts, then halacha lemaisa, I'm chayiv for my cohort, Reuven is chayiv for his cohort. Beautiful. Says the Gemara, b'mukdashin my time of us. Remember again, the Mishnah said that ultimately there is no din of reishis hageiz by consecrated animals. So says the Gemara, why is that? Amen. The Mukdash in my time alone. We'll say, why is that? By consecrated animals, that there is no din. Ultimately, again, a racious hageiz. Amar krat soncha. Because the pasuk is speaking about the obligation to shear, to give of your first shearings to the kohen. It says what? Soncha, your sheep. Velot son hektish. And it doesn't apply ultimately again to the son of hektish. Time at the kas of rachmanat soncha. So you're telling me now the reason why consecrated sheep will be pater from reishis hageiz is because the pasuk says soncha your sheep halav hachi amina kadshim chayiv. So reishis hageiz. So interestingly enough, what you're telling me is in the absence of that pasuk soncha, I would have thought that what, that the sheep of hekdish are chayiv in first shearings. But how could that be? Halav bnei gizaninu. Bosa, you're not allowed to shear a sheep which belongs to hekdish. Dichsiv los velos sagus b'char soncha. The halacha is also you're not allowed to shear consecrated sheep. So what's that? So you hear what's happening over here? We're learning out. How do I? The Mishnah tells me that a consecrated sheep, a sheep of hekdish, is not subject to reishis hageiz. How do we know that? Because the pasuk says soncha your sheep, which tells you that without the pasuk, I would have thought that a sheep of hekdish is subject to reishis hageiz. How can you say that? You're not allowed to shear. You're not allowed to shear consecrated sheep. To which the Gemara says, you're right. The truth is, if we're referring about, say, to what's called kachem mizbeach, which means sacrificial animals, then you are correct. But what are we dealing with over here? So about, say, we are dealing ultimately again with sheep which have kiddushas bedek habayis. So about, say, what does that mean? So remember again, kiddushas bedek habayis means animals which belong to the Beis HaMikdash but have monetary sanctity, not physical sanctity. Technically speaking, those animals, ultimately, again, you have the ability to use them. V'amar v'lozer, kachri v'edek habayis, asura megiza v'avoda. But one second, v'lozer says that even sheep, which belong to the Beis HaMikdash, which only possess monetary sanctity, not physical sanctity, you're still not allowed to go ahead and work them and shear them. To which the Gemara says, yes, but that's midrabanan. That Isra is only midrabanan, not midaraisa. I would have thought, that since technically speaking, you are permitted to shear these sheep, that Allah said, maybe you would say, fine, if you have tzon of bedek habayis, don't shear it. But if you did shear it, then what? You should give the portion to the kohen. Therefore, the pasuk says, soncha, to teach you, no, any sheep which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash in any way, monetary sanctity, physical sanctity, is not subject to the obligation of reishis hageiz. I v'ha kadosh lo. But I don't understand. The wool itself is hektish, right? The wool itself belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the havamina that you, even if you ex post facto, if you sheared it, is that the right sheared, right? The sheep was shorn, right? So then halacha lemaisa, it's hektish. So why would you think you're going to give it to the kohen? Yisach da'it chamina lifrok v'leisivle. I might have thought that maybe if you already sheared it, that halacha lemaisa you should redeem it and then give it to the kohen. I v'ha boy ha'amod v'aracha. But one second, before you redeem anything from hekdish, it requires ha'amod and ha'aracha, which also means ha'amod means it must be something which is able to stand on its own 2 feet and requires evaluation. So hanich l'man domar kachi v'lekabayis l'hoye b'chla ha'amod v'aracha. So if you say that kachi v'lekabayis, items with financial sanctity, do not require this process of ha'amod v'aracha, then you could redeem the wool. Elaman damar hayu ma'ikalameimar. Rabbi says, according to the opinion who says that even kachi bedek habayis require ha'amad of ha'aracha, the wool can't stand on its own 2 feet, obviously, and therefore cannot be redeemed. So what's the habit? You know, Amr Abmani bar Patyash Mishurim B'yanai, hacha V'makdish behemta lebedek habayis chutz migizosel. Okay. So let's say, so what's the case we're dealing with over here? I'm makdish my animal to bedek habayis, right? I'm makdish my animal ultimately again for financial sanctity to the base hamikdash, and I make the explicit condition I'm being makdish this animal except for the wool. Except for the wool. Sefer Abba say, well, I would have thought in this case, sagadait chamina ligzos vele sivle. So Rabbi said, I would have thought here's a perfect case. I'm makdish my animal to bedek habayis with the exception of the wool. So Rabbi said, what should be the halacha of the wool? What should it be subject to? Reishis hagez, right? The first shearings to the kohen. Because again, I was not makdish the wool. Amar Kra, therefore the pasuk says, soncha v'lo tzon shel hakdish. Therefore the pasuk says, no, the obligation of reishis hagez only applies to your sheep and not to the sheep of hakdish. I ihachi. Kadshe Mizbeach Nami. We'll say if that's the case, then why can't I set up the same type of situation by Kadshe Mizbeach? Let me see a case, Kadshe Mizbeach, where what? Halacha Maaseh says, I'm being makdish my animal to the Mizbeach, chutz migizosel, with the exception of the wool. And therefore, again, Halacha Maaseh, let me give the Reishis Hagez to the Kohen. It doesn't work. Why? Kachshi. Because we'll say, ultimately, again, if you, we'll say, you know, when you take off the wool of an animal, so what does that do to the rest of the animal? It negatively impacts it. The animal in general is weakened. If you look at Rashi, machash hagiza hanitelas macheshes habaser va'asul gozeza. So apparently, again, which makes sense, if you shear an animal and take off its wool, you compromise its body. So we'll say by carbonos, therefore you're not allowed to do this because the act of taking off the wool, obviously prior to shechita, will compromise the sacrificial meat. I kachi b'de kabayis nami kachshi. But one second, if that's the case, then I will say, why should you be able to go ahead and shear a bede kabayis animal as well? You are weakening the animal. Damr chutz migizo kechisha. Okay, so what's the Gemara says, what's the case over here? Where I say, ultimately, I'm being makdish my animal for bede kabayis, excluding the shearings and any subsequent physical weakening of the animal. To which the Gemara says, okay, kachem is beach nami damr chutz migizo kechisha. So I can set up a parallel case, ultimately, again, by kachem is beach as well. Afilu hachi, pashta kidusha bakula. Oh, I will say, here's the problem. The problem is, you can't really make a case, you can't really create a construct where you say that halacha lemaisa, I'm being makdish my animal for kachem is beach, chutz migizo kechisha. I will say, this is actually quite fascinating. So what we're doing over here is, the fundamental distinction between monetary sanctity and physical sanctity is the ability to create partial sanctity. So for example, in Kachi Bedek HaMizbeach, Kachi Bedek HaBayis, I'm sorry, which are animals which are given to the Beis HaMikdash, not for carbonic purposes, but become the financial property of the Mizbeach, of the Beis HaMikdash. So you have the ability, if you want, to say, I'm makdish this, but not that. So for example, if I'm being makdish animal for Bedek HaBayis, I can say I'm being makdish the animal, but not the wool. I could do that. By kachim mizbeach, you cannot do that. By kachim mizbeach, essentially, again, I will say, once you makdish one part of the animal, then what happens? That kedusha spreads to every part of the animal. Here we go. So the Gemara says, afilu achad pashta kedusha b'kula. Menat temra. So we'll say, so where do we know this from? Dam Rav Yosi, v'alo b'mukdashin, ha'omer ragla shel zu ula ola. Well, so listen to this. A person takes an animal, he says, the leg of this animal should be an ola. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Kula ola. Right? You're all in. No such thing as being a little ola. Right? So we'll say, either you are ola or you're not an ola. Ultimately, so if I'm makdish the leg of an animal for an ola, that kedusha is poshet. That kedusha spreads out and is makdish the entire animal. Vafilu Rabbi Meir, the amar ein kula ola, and even according to Rabbi Meir, who says no, if you're makdish a part of the animal, it doesn't automatically make the entire animal kodesh. Hani mili, the akdish darvishan neshama tuluya bo, aval hikdish darvishan neshama tuluya bo kodesha. And we'll see, even Rabbi Meir will agree. He'll say like this: if you're makdish a part of the animal that the animal could live without, then einachinami the kedusha might not spread throughout the entire animal. But if you are makdish a part of the animal that the animal cannot live without, then what? The kedusha, in fact, does spread to the animal in its entirety. So Rava Amar Rava says, "Bemakdish giza atzma." What's the case where you're just makdish the wool? Sagadai tchamina. I would have thought, therefore, ligzos velifrog velesivle. So shear the animal, redeem the wool, and give it to the kohen. Amar Kra geiz tzoncha. Therefore, the pasuk says, the shearings of your sheep. Titein lo, titein lo. Misha'in mechusra ele geziza unesina. what do you give to the Kohen? You only give to the Kohen ultimately that which is lacking shearing and giving. Yotza zeh, this comes to exclude a case of Shemachusra, Geziza, Pedia, Unesina. So therefore again, also what the Gemara has over here is as follows. Now what we're suggesting is that how do we know that the wool of any type of Kodesh animal, whether it is Kachshei Mizbech or Kachshei Beda Kabayis, is not subject to the halachos of Reishis HaGeiz, because the pasuk says, Geiz Tzoncha Titein Lo, the shearing of your sheep you shall give to him, which the Gemara darshins, the only type of wool that is subject to the halachos of Reishis HaGeiz is a type of wool that just needs to be shorn and gifted. If it requires any additional process, then ultimately it is not subject to this halacha. I will say any wool that comes from a sacrifice, that comes from a kodesh animal, whether it's kachim bedek habayis or kachim mizbeach, requires an additional step of what? Of what? Of redemption. So because it requires an additional step, it's not just enough to shear it and to give it, therefore it is excluded from this halacha. If that's the case, elatzoncha lamai asa. So we'll say, we originally thought that this exclusion for Beis HaMikdash animals came from the phrase Tzoncha. It's only your sheep that is subject to this halacha, but sheep that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash is not. So now we're learning it out from Geiz Tzoncha Titein Lo. So what I learned from Tzoncha, Lamai Asa, L'chidisanya, Behemas HaShutfim Chayi Bereshes Hagaz. Let's listen to this. If two people, Reuben and Shimon, own an animal jointly, ultimately the animal is still subject to the obligation of Reishis HaGeiz. Rabbi Eloi Poter. Rabbi Eloi says, you're Poter. What's the reason? My time, Rabbi Eloi, Amar Krat Tzoncha. Pasuk says, your sheep, singular, only if it's owned by one person, velo shel shutfus, and not a jointly owned sheep. V'rabbanon, I l'me'utei shutfus ovid kochavim. The Rabbanon say it's true, Tzoncha comes to exclude something, but it comes to exclude a partnership with a Gentile. Right? If you have a partnership with an Akum, that's when the animal is freed from the obligation of Reishis Agaz. But ultimately, again, if you have a partnership with a Jew, of course you're Chayiv. Rabbi Eloi, Ashutfus Avid Kochav Minale. Where does Rabbi Eloi learn out that a Shutfus with an Akum patters down from Reishis Agaz? So the Gemara says, Nafkele mi Reishis Dekra. He learns out from the beginning of the Pasuk, Reishis Degancha. So we'll say, remember again, that pasuk in its entirety speaks about Reishis Degancha, the first of your grain, Tiroshcha, the first of your grapes, Yitzarecha, your olives, Bereishis Geiz Tzoncha Titeilo, in the first of your shearings. So Rabbi Eloi learns out Reishis Degancha, from the singular of Degancha, which is your grain, which is Truma. That teaches me that it's only Degancha, your grain. But if you own that grain in partnership with an Akum, ultimately what? That grain will be potter from Truma. The Rabbanon will say, here's the problem, the Reishis is Hifsika Inyon. See, the Rabbanon will say, you can't darshan that pasuk like that. Why? Because there's a second Reishis. The second Reishis in that pasuk, Vereishis Geiz Tzoncha, essentially goes ahead and disconnects the two parts of the pasuk. As such, you can't take a drasha from the first part and apply it to the second part. Rabbi Lai, how does Rabbi Lai answer that? Vav Hadar Arve. He says the Vav is the connector, because the second part of the pasuk is Vereishis Geiz Tzoncha Titein Lo. That connects the second part to the first part and allows you to learn the drasha of Vereishis Degancha, which teaches you that a shutfus, a partnership with an akum, ultimately exempts the grain and by extension exempts the sheep. But the Rabbanon will say, Lo nichtiv rachmana lo vav velo reishis. So the Rabbanon will say, no, if that's the case, then let the Torah just leave out the vav and let the Torah leave out the first reishis. Rabbi Eloi, Aigi dehai kidushas damim, bahai kidushas aguf, pasik luhu, vahadar arvi luhu. Rabbi Eloi will say, since the second part of the pasik, Reishis HaGeiz is Kedushas Domim. Rabosei does not have physical sanctity, but only has financial sanctity. Vahai, and the beginning part of the Pasuk, which is talking about Truma, ultimately has Kedushas HaGov, physical sanctity. Therefore, the Pasuk deals with them separately, but then brings them back together again. That Halacha L'Maisa, that Vav connects the two parts. So we'll say, so V'ibaisin, the other possibility is, so we'll say, so again, what we have over here right now is a really fundamental Achlogsin Rabbi Eloi, and the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon understand that if you have a jointly owned Jewish animal, that didn't make sense. If you have an animal which is jointly owned by Jews, right? Halacha lemaisa, it is subject to the obligation of reishis hageiz. Ultimately, again, Rabbi Eloi says, it's potter. It's potter. Now, everyone agrees. So machok is by a Jewish partnership. Everyone agrees that if it's a partnership between a Jew and a non-Jew, then what's the halacha? It's potter. They disagree as to where you learn that out from, but everybody's agreeing with that in principle. Now watch this. V'ba'yisema, the other possibility is, Shutfus Ovid Kochavim B'chuma Rabbanan Chiyuvi Mechayvi. Boss is pretty wild. The other possibility is maybe, when it comes to Truma, if a Jew and a non-Jew have a partnership, that produce is subject to Truma. So we'll say, for example, a Jew and a non-Jew own a field together, produces grain, maybe Halacha L'maisa, according to the Rabbanan, ultimately, again, that field would be subject to the obligation of Truma. Where do we know that from? So the Gemara says, Desanyo, Yisava Oik Chavim Shalak Chusad B'Shutfus. If you have a Jew and a non-Jew who went ahead and bought a field together in partnership, so Tevel V'chulin Me'uravin Zeba Zeb Divir Reb Shimon Gamliel. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says that what? There's Tevel and Chulin mixed together. Which Shavose means, in other words, that this entire field is a mixture of Tevel and Chulin. Remember again, the chulin being a reference to the part that's owned by an akum, the tevel being a reference ultimately again to the part that's owned by a yisrael. So this entire field is a mixture of obligated and exempt produce. Divrei Shimon Gamliel. I'm sorry, Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel Omer shall yisrael chayiv v'shal ovik ochavim pater. So Moshe Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says, no, the produce of the Jew is chayiv and shumas and maestros. The produce of the Gentile is not. So the Gemara says, watch this. Adkan lo pligi ela demar savar yesh breira umar savar in breira. So we'll say, what are they arguing about? So the truth is, interestingly enough, in principle, they're saying the same exact thing, which is what? That the Jew's produce is chayiv, the non-Jew's produce is pater. What are they arguing about? Do you have the ability to retroactively clarify which is the Jew's produce and which is the Gentile's produce? So Rebbe will say, no, you cannot, in Breira. Therefore, the entire field is a mixture of Tevel and Chulin and whatever. Let's assume for now that you can't do anything with it. But Lemaisa, again, the second of Ereshem, we all says, no, Yesh Breira, let them divide up the produce. The non-Jew's produce will be Truma exempt. The Jew's produce will be obviously subject to Tevel and to Truma, and therefore again Yesh Breira. So we'll say, but what do you see from here? Adkan lo pligi ela demarsav yishir v'marsav ein breira. Avas shutfes to ovid kochavim divrei hakol chayeves. But I will say, what do you see from here? You see from here that everyone is agreeing in principle that when a Jew and a non-Jew own a field together, that field, quote unquote, is still subject to the halachos of Truma. Or I should say differently, the Jew's portion of that field is subject to Truma. But what don't we say? We don't say that just because there is a Gentile ownership interest, that suddenly that exempts the fields from Truma. So the other possibility is, Tarbayu l'Rabbi Eloi mitzoncha nafka. So ultimately, again, to which the Gemara says, there could very well be, that ultimately, again, that everybody's learning it out from Soncha. From Soncha, shutfus tovik ochav in my time. So we'll say, remember again, that will learn out both halachas. Both ultimately, again, if you have Jewish ownership, we're back now to sheep. If you have a jointly owned Jewish partnership and a Jew non-Jew partnership, both cases will be exempt from reishis hageiz. Both cases, why? So ultimately, again, because why? I will say, if the Jew and the non-Jew own the sheep together, so again, that sheep will be exempt from reishis hageiz. Why? Because it's not exclusive ownership by a Jew. So the Gemara says, the Yisrael nami lo miyachdilei. Similarly, even if it's jointly owned by Yisrael, we'll say what's going to be the halacha. Even if it's jointly owned by Yisrael, that's also not singularly owned by any one individual. So in other words, we'll say, the Joshua from Tzoncha teaches you that there must be singular ownership. If there's not singular ownership, ultimately the animal will not be subject to reishis hageiz. Whether there's not singular ownership because there's ownership with a non-Jew, or there's not singular ownership because there's ownership with another Jew, Rabbi Eloi's version will be that halacha lemaisa, that animal is reishis hageiz exempt. V'rabbanan, the Rabbanan will say, Ovid kochavim lav bar chiyuvuhu. So I'll say, the Ovid kochavim, his ownership interest in the sheep will exempt the sheep from reishis hageiz. Why? Because he's not subject to these halachos. Yisrael bar chiyuvahu. Yisrael ultimately again will be a chiv. Therefore, we'll say in the Rabbanan's worldview, what's the halacha? If you have a sheep which is jointly owned by Jew and non-Jew, yes, that is true. The non-Jewish ownership interest will essentially exempt the sheep from Rishis Hageis. But if you have two Jews who own a sheep together, why would that sheep be exempt? Both of them ultimately what? Have an obligation in this mitzvah. So both say, so fundamental machlokes, ultimately in Rabbi Yilai and the Rabbanan. You hear what the machlokes really centers on? It centers on, everyone agrees that, obviously, the pasuk says, soncha, your sheep, your sheep. So both say, so what does your sheep come to exclude? Rabbi Yilai says, your sheep comes to exclude any form of partnership. Jewish partnership, Jew and non-Jew partnership. If the sheep is not singularly owned by a Jew, it is exempt from Reishis Hageis. Rabbanan say no. What soncha means, it has to be yours. Yours means what? Jewish. Yours means Jewish. So what's exempt? If you have a Jew and a non-Jew partnership in a sheep, then halacha lemaaseh again, that's exempt. But if it's two Jews who have a partnership in a sheep, that will be subject ultimately to Reishis Hageis. Amar Rava. Mod Rabbi Loi, v'truma. So we'll say, this is actually very interesting. Rabbi Lai will agree that in the case of Truma, afagav dechsev digancha, right? We'll say, even though it says digancha, didach in the shutfusla. So we'll say again, remember, so Rabbi Lai's whole point, so we'll say Rabbi Lai's entire drasha hinges on one word. Which word? Which word? Tzoncha, the possessive. Tzoncha. So okay, there's a lot of other examples where it uses the singular. For example, digancha, which is by Truma. By Truma. So the pasuk says, digancha, your Truma. So I would have thought that's what didach in the shutfis lo. I would have thought using that logic about, say, therefore, again, which type of produce is subject to truma? Only what?
Singular owner.
But if there is a partnership, even a Jewish partnership, maybe it's not subject ultimately again to truma. Kasev rachmana, trumo seichen. Oh, so you want to say, here's the difference. By truma, the Torah goes back and uses a plural form, trumo seichen, which comes to teach me what? That even if there's a partnership, even if there's a Jewish partnership, even if there's a Jewish partnership, ultimately, again, their produce will be subject to Truma. If that's the case, Ela digancha lamali. So we'll say, so then why do I need the singular of digancha? Lemeute shutfus to Oved Kochavim. So we'll say, that comes to exclude a shutfus of an Oved Kochavim. So we'll say, so therefore, again, remember, this is really very, very exciting. Because even Rabbi Eloi, who darshans the tzoncha, when it comes ultimately to Reishis Hageis to say, the only time a sheep is subject to Reishis Hageis is when it's singularly owned. Singularly owned. Even if you have a Jewish partnership, it's exempt. He will agree in these other cases. We're going to go through now a whole list of exciting cases. Case number one is Truma. It says, Digancha, singular, but it also says Trumo Seichem. Trumo Seichem, plural, teaches me that even if there is jointly owned produce, it is subject ultimately to the halachos of Truma. If that's the case, then what does Digancha tell me? Can't belong to an Akum. Right? If there's any Akum involvement, ultimately, if there's a Shutfus involvement, ultimately, again, it is exempt from Truma. Ben Abbas, and I do want to point out, remember, that this is a machlokis ultimately to the Rabbanan, because the Rabbanan just said before that if you have a Jew, non-Jew partnership in a field, that produce is still subject to Truma. So that's a machlokis. Next, Chalo. We'll say, what about the portion of Chalo, the portion of the dough you give to the Kohen? Afagav dichsib reishis. Ve'ikalameimar nelef reishis mireishis hagaz. Ma'la halon dushutfus lo, afkan dushutfus lo. So we'll say, by Chalo uses the word reishis. Says the word Reishis by Chalo. Says the word Reishis by Reishis Hageis. I would have thought, just like by Reishis Hageis, according to Rabbi Eloi, you can't have any form of partnership. And if there is any form of partnership, then what? Then it is exempt from Reishis Hageis. So I would have said by Chalo also, if this dough is owned jointly, right, this joint ownership, it should be pater from Chala as well. Because of Rachmana Ariso Seichem. Therefore, we'll say the Pasuk uses the plural form, your plural dough. So which teaches me that what? That even halacha l'maaseh, if the dough is owned by a partnership, halacha l'maaseh is still subject to the halachos. Ela time of chala. Ela time of the chsivari sosechem. So the only reason I know that even a shutfus is chayv in chala is because it says ariso sechem. Halav hachi amina nelif reishis reishis mi reishis hagaz. Without that ariso sechem, I would have thought that indeed I learn it out of reishis reishis from Reishis Hageis. And therefore, again, to tell me that just like by Reishis Hageis, a partnership ultimately is exempt from that obligation. So to by Chalo, a partnership should be exempt from that obligation. Adrabo, I can say just the opposite. Nelef mitshuma, why don't I learn out Chalo from Truma and just say that what? Rabbi say, just like by Truma, Truma Seichem teaches me that what? That if there's a partnership of Jews, that it is still subject to Truma. So too by Challah, ultimately if there's a partnership by Jews, it should be subject to Challah. Hachanami. You're right. We would do that. Ela Arisa Seichem Lamali. Ultimately, so why do I need Arisa Seichem? We will say, so watch this. So in other words, I would learn out, Inachinami, even without a drasha, I would learn out Challah from Truma. And I would learn out that just as Truma is subject to the obligation of Truma, even if it's jointly owned produce, so too by Challah. Even if you have jointly owned Challah, it's subject to the obligation of Challah. If that's the case, then why do I need the word Arisa Seichem? Lamali, Kede Arisa Seichem. Vos Arisa Seichem teaches me something different, which is, teaches me how much dough is subject to the obligation of Challah. Or say it a little bit differently, how much dough do you have to have in order to trigger the obligation of Challah? If you look at Rashi, Kedei Arisa Seichem, five lines up from the bottom in Rashi, Bamidbar Nitlam Torah. So remember again, Torah was given to us in the desert. V'sham ne'amar lahem Kedei Arisa Seichem shal achshav. And I will say, when the Torah tells us Arisa Seichem, interestingly enough, I will say, Arisa Seichem literally means what? The amount of your kneading bowl. So I'll say, what that means is, the amount of stuff you need with a K in the desert is the amount of dough that is subject to the obligation of Challah, which is a reference to what? To the measurement of the mun. The obligation of Challah, Rabbi Osai, the amount of dough you need to trigger the Challah obligation corresponds to the amount of mun they received in the desert. Pretty amazing. Chai, so the Kama Isas Midbar, Omer Lagogoles. Va Omer Asiria Saifa, Va Cheshbon Ola Hamisha Lugin Siporium, that was Mem Gimel Beitzim, the volume of 43 eggs. We're not going to get into this now, but essentially Arisa Seichem teaches me that the same amount that you have in your mixing bowl in the desert, which is the amount of mun, that's the amount of dough where if you have it, what's the halacha? What's the halacha that it will trigger? Ultimately, again, an obligation for Challah. We'll say one more minute, then we'll have to stop. So the Gemara says as follows, Peah. So also when it comes to peah, the obligation to leave a corner of your field for the poor, even though it phrases it in the singular, sadcha, I might have thought, therefore what? It only applies, it only applies to a field you own yourself. But if you own the field in partnership, then halacha l'maaseh shouldn't be obligated in peah. There also, the Torah uses the plural, when you reap, the reap of your field, right? Kutzuchem is plural, when you reap plural. So ultimately teaches me that what? Even if halacha l'maaseh you own the field in partnership, it's still subject to peah. Ela sadcha lamali. So we'll say if that's the case, ultimately, why do I need the word sadcha then my peah? Lemeute shutfus tobi kochavim. The teacher will say that what? That halacha l'maaseh, if I own the field jointly with an akum, that field will be exempt from peah. So stop over here again. We're going to continue a very exciting list of other halachos like this. We're going to get into mezuzah tomorrow. I can't. I don't even have words. It's going to be. It's going to be incredible. Amir Sashem. Go ahead.
There are some gallons of meat.